This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Everything is good and round. I'm here again with a sunshine smile upon my face. My friends are close at hand, and all my inhibitions have disappeared without a chance. I'm glad.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. Apparently this piece of legislation was supposed to be part of the legacy of two outgoing individuals. One was the Speaker of the Wisconsin State Assembly, Robin Voss, who has decided not to run for re-election, and of course our Democratic Governor, Tony Evers. And we do have a state budget surplus, and the determination on how to spend that money is always very difficult and contentious. And the fact that Robin Voss and Governor Tony Evers were in agreement with this piece of legislation should just arise some suspicions. And we have on the line Wisconsin State Senator Dora Drake, representing the people of the 4th District. Senator Drake, how are you this morning?
I'm tired, but I am well. How about you, Sherwin?
Well, you earned the right to be tired, and we want to thank you for your courageous vote. Senator, we did our best job to try and explain as many of the details of the budget surplus bill to our listeners yesterday so that people weren't shocked by, oh, why would they vote down giving us $300 or $600? Why would they vote down property tax relief? All of our property taxes have gone up. Why would they vote down additional funding for special education? Senator, can you give us some details as to why this bill was mostly smoke and mirrors and it wouldn't have delivered as promised?
Yeah, absolutely. So, for example, I knew one of the biggest things that folks were going to talk about were the rebates, right? And again, on detail, they said it was $600 for married households, $300 for single households. But when we did the math and we met with our fiscal folks at the state, the reality is that 1.3 million people, not and across the state, especially folks in the district, wouldn't even receive this check. It's because if you received any tax benefits, even though you paid your taxes, you would see little to none. So that includes folks that are within low income, or if you're a senior on a fixed income, or if you're a single parent with several kids, you would see little to no dollars. And so in some cases, you know, some people only see like $10 extra. That's not immediate relief. And that's not what we were hearing that people really need. We know that we're in an affordability crisis. And I want to make sure that people get the direct immediate relief that they need. But that wasn't the case, especially with the property tax relief. That's another issue that was going on. But the reality is, with the household value in our state is around $312,000. But under this plan, most owners would only see $107 in their savings, and they wouldn't even see until next year. So then again, that's another disappointment. I'm sure a lot of folks would have hoped that they would see the money sooner. And this is also tied into increase in school funding, special education, this, any other. And look, I know our schools need the help. We've heard it from day one, and it's something that I will continue to fight for. But this bill also established a new school funding formula for calculating aid, which frankly wasn't clear for me. You know, we didn't have enough time to get clarity from the fiscal bureau on if it was actually going to shortchange Milwaukee and how that was going to impact the schools regarding the standard equalization aid and if it'll be more or less. And so in the future, this could have been a tool where MPS actually could have gotten less in the future, which is something our schools and our kids absolutely can't afford. And again, above all of this, The goal was trying to ensure that folks got direct relief and support. The reality is that this didn't. The majority of this actually just created a $2.9 billion deficit. That is $3 billion in the hole. There is not enough money that we can raise enough to fill in the gaps to address all the issues that we're talking about. Most of the individuals that in the state that are Medicaid live in my district, as well as Senator Tanya Johnson's and Senator Carpenter's. they need Medicaid in order to even get the health care that they need. And we're already forecasting that there might be cuts in that. We already dealt with SNAP benefits and how that was changed in terms of what people can purchase or not because of the feds not giving the money that they needed. And so when we talk about the future and the needs that the district needs, voting for this would have actually put a lot of my constituents and a lot of folks at risk without giving them the immediate relief that they needed, which is unfortunate because, frankly, I understand the need to do something now. You know, that's the reason why I went into politics and wanted to serve the people that I represent. But this is not it, frankly. You know, it's irresponsible. You know, the Senate Republicans decided to come to us last minute and didn't even really negotiate a deal. One of the things that I would have loved to see in negotiations was actually increasing the minimum wage. That would have been a way to ensure that people were getting increases in their wages so they could afford to live what they need, and they will have seen that directly, not just a one-time check that they probably wouldn't even get. So that's essentially what's happened.
Speaking with State Senator Dora Drake, you had a couple of unconventional allies in this this fight to kill this proposal. A couple of your colleagues, mm-hmm. Republican colleagues in the Wisconsin State Senate, but also Republican candidate for governor, Tom Tiffany. So when you had your conversations with, I'm sure, a couple of your Republican colleagues that voted with all of the Democrats in the Senate, what was some of their opposition to this legislation? Because it really seemed like Robin Voss had it all sewed up and it sailed through the Wisconsin State Assembly. But in the Senate, it faced a much bigger hurdle. Did your Republican colleagues give you any idea of some of the things that they had issues with in the bill?
They didn't have the votes at the end of the day. I think they, for the Republicans that voted against it, their concerns was the fiscal number. You know, if you're running any type of business, or if you're doing your budget, if you are making decisions and you're saying we're going to spend all this money now, but then you are going to be in a larger hole that you can't even afford to fill up within 2-4 years, that's not smart and that's not wise. And you're actually harming the people that we need to be caring for in the future. And so that's mainly the reason that I've heard. And I think what happened yesterday, again, was the Senate Republicans didn't have the votes. They thought that they could try to add some other stuff to win over some of their members. And they, again, didn't bring anything to the table where they thought that they could sway us at the end of the day. And so that's essentially the reason behind this.
Speaking with State Senator Dora Drake, representing the good people of the 4th District. Dora, y'all made the governor mad. This is the first time in his almost 2 full terms that I actually heard him say some disparaging and discouraging remarks about other Democrats. What on earth was Tony Evers' motivation for this particular spending package? This is a governor who has been fairly decent with common sense legislation over his past 2 terms. Mm-hmm. What was his motivation for this one? Because this was a Republican bill.
To be honest, Sherwin, I don't know. You know, we saw all the tweets. We saw all the back and forth in the comments. I will say this, you know, before the Governor Evers became our governor, I know he was our superintendent for education for public instruction. And one thing that I do know about him is that he really cares about kids. And so I think he was hoping that there was some good that he could that he was trying to do before he left by the end of his term. You'd have to ask him. So even though obviously the governor is upset about this, I will say at the end of the day, it's not his job to count votes. That's the majority leader's, you know, responsibility in the Senate and in the Assembly. And one thing that I meant to mention is that the $2 billion that they said we have in surplus was a projected number. We don't even have that money yet in our coffers, right? And so we don't even know if it'd be larger or smaller. And, you know, I personally think that with them wanting to do the best for our kids was trying to find something to do before he left. But you'd have to ask him personally because I can't speak for him.
Last question, Senator. The measure failed in the Senate. So what typically would happen is it would go back to the assembly. Another version of the bill would be created. It would be voted on in the assembly, and that new version, that new bill would come back to the Senate. Is that going to be the process this time, or is this whole thing dead?
We don't know. I guess time will tell. You know, I think it'll be determinant on how badly Speaker Voss and Majority Leader LeMahieu want this to go through. So that's to be determined. And I think it's important to say that this is not just a Dem, you know, Dems killing it. This was a bipartisan concern where folks said the money is too large. We need to figure this out and we need more time. And good governance is looking at all the details, making sure that we're doing the best outcome for individuals, providing immediate relief without putting us in harm's way in the future. And so the yet is to be determined.
State Senator Dora Drake, representing the good people of the 4th District, thank you for your time and thank you for your hard work. And hopefully you'll be able to get a little rest today. You were up late last night.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure of that, but, you know, anything for the residents of the 4th Senate District.
Thank you, Senator. Have a good day. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
I got to talk about my bill. My bill would not fail to pass in the assembly and in the Senate. I want to get out ahead of some of this technology, and I do it for the future. I don't do it for right now. So we have examples right now of what could be more extreme in the future. And if we have people doing reckless acts that's disrupting the peace and disrupting public safety in order for monetized viral content, I think that that needs to be curtailed because there's no telling how far people will go. And I think somebody in the YouTube chat said, oh, the ACLU would sue because this is not freedom of speech. Absolutely not. But this is not legitimate, credible journalism. This is seeking to cause public disruption for the purposes of monetization. That's a sinister motive. And some of these pranks, like what if somebody has a heart attack? Right. You prank somebody like, oh, hi, ma'am. Is your name Sally Smith? Oh, yeah, I'm Sally Smith. Oh, I'm sorry to tell you, your husband just got in a fatal car accident. Sally Smith starts freaking out. She has a heart attack and she dies. You're liable for that. Now, Sally Smith's husband is perfectly fine, but people will film somebody's reaction and they have no bounds. Now, sure, it's freedom of speech, but also there can be consequences from that. Freedom of speech is not unlimited. I had to teach people what freedom of speech was within my first couple of weeks or months on the radio because people thought they could call talk radio and say whatever they want and that I legally couldn't hang up on them. Sherwin, why'd you hang up on me? I have freedom of speech. No, it doesn't work like that. It means that you can say what you want and write what you want about the government, and the government can't arrest you for talking about the government. But if you say something to me or to another person, you can get punched in the face and hung up on. Let's talk to Blake. Blake, you're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you?
I'm blessed, my man, Sherwin Hughes. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, man. What's on your mind?
Man, I'm blessed in that piece. But I missed the conversation with Ms. Clark. And
you mean Dora Drake?
Ms. Drake. I'm sorry, Ms. Drake. I did work with her to get her elected.
Oh.
And I want to make sure that she hears me. And my brother moved to California. Simon is always around, Mr. Simon Warren. But I would like to extend the olive branch to her.
Simon moved to California. Yeah. When did he move?
Dude, I found out about maybe 3 months ago, but he's been gone about a year.
Oh.
He's been gone about a year. Sweet Black Coffee been closed about 2 years, but that's 2035 West Funded Life, best place in the world, between Brazil and Vegas, best place in the world to go somewhere and party, but it's closed. But let her know, I would like to leave my information for you, for her, that she needs anything done for the work that we did for her, I would do anything she needs for her.
Blake, I would say just call her office.
I just tried to. I tried to Google it, but, you know, I'm driving, so I can do that. I'm going to call her office. But she was just on the phone with you, so I know either she's listening or close to you, or I can reach you. But I just appreciate you, man. I appreciate your knowledge, and everything is good. The weather is nice. Happy belated Mother's Day to you and your people. Father's Day is coming. Reckless children out here in the world. I have no idea what's wrong with them, man. We all here on the breath. We just got to take our time. And you keep on hanging up on who you want to, man. Do your thing. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Blake. We appreciate you, too.
Yes, sir.
All right, then. Blake says a lot in a little bit of time. Unlike Bob, who says nothing in a long period of time. See there? That's how you do it. You get 37 different topics in 84 seconds. See that? See how easy that is? See what you guys are talking about on the YouTube chat. Oh, right here, LaRon says, the ACLU would say that law would be a violation of free speech and would end up in the Supreme Court, but I'm in favor of it. Speech is not allowed to incite violence or seriously put the public in jeopardy. Go into a crowded theater and yell fire, you're going to jail if there's no fire. All I'm saying is, and we know that that's often cited when people say, oh, I have the freedom to say whatever I want. No, you don't. And so imagine somebody like Chud the Builder, who's essentially running into a theater full of black people, yelling the N-word, filming the reaction, and then making money off of that reaction. Freedom of speech has guardrails. It is not totally unlimited. I think when people hear the word freedom, they think totally unlimited with no repercussions when you say certain things. This is more for the future, because as time goes on, everything gets more extreme. Because now, like, I don't even know what qualifies as extreme content, but I think it's going to take more and more because we get desensitized to things. Like, seeing dead people on the internet is nothing now. People will live stream funerals and caskets, and they'll be at the scene of a shooting. Someone will find out that their family member is dead by going to Facebook, because Facebook, someone can put this content on Facebook before the authorities have even identified the body. And that's happened more than a few times. There has to be some kind of consequence, because it's only going to get worse. And there's examples of, do I have some examples here? Of people dying and getting injured, filming viral content. Because some of these people just have no sense whatsoever. They live their lives for the next viral moment. And it's addictive. It's an addiction. You get addicted to the dopamine spike. You get addicted to, it feels good. You guys post something, you come back 20 minutes later, and the weirdest stuff goes viral. Stuff that I just want to share sometimes, and it's very rare for me to go viral. Here at The Truth, we've had a number of pieces of our content go viral. Probably the biggest one was Melanie Ricks and Benjamin talking about Drake's penis. Got well over 100,000 views, likes, shares. I don't even remember the context of it, but it exploded. Another viral moment was when Benjamin asked Dame, what was Dame time? The guy that played for the Bucks. He came from Portland, came to Milwaukee, went back to Portland. I don't even remember his last name anymore.
Damian Lillard.
Benjamin asked, he was at a press conference. How the hell Benjamin got to a press conference with Damian Lillard? I have no idea. But they're taking questions for Dame Lillard, and Benjamin asked him, because I guess like Sexy Red or something approached Dame Lillard on Instagram and tried to date him. And Benjamin was like, oh, about your love life, are you going to date Sexy Red? That went viral. Last thing that I posted that went viral is I posted a picture of Erica Kirk with an African-American man that she took to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. There was like a pre-party. And Erica Kirk was with a black fella. And they posed for a picture. And the picture is widely distributed on the internet. Erica Kirk and this black fella. And they look happy and comfortable and cozy. That was their date. So what? No big deal. That got 500,000 views on Threads. I don't even use Threads. I kept getting all these damn notifications and all these shares and all these. So you never know what content is actually going to go viral. And I think there is this motivation for people to create this extreme, insane content that harms people. Now, you got Chud the Builder, who we talked about a little while ago, who is now facing a whole host of felony charges because his whole MO was he would call black people mostly African-American men, which at the end of the day, it's embarrassing for us to be filmed being berated racially in public. And there's witnesses, like he's doing this in Nashville, Tennessee. There's people all over the place to be called that word and to be filmed and then to have a benign reaction. I don't think most people take that as maturity, discipline, and strength. They probably see it as weakness, because I know it's very offensive to me, because I'd like to think that the threat of violence from a black person when you call us the N-word is enough to get white people to not do it. And he basically punched a hole in that theory saying, oh, watch this. I'll call them the N-word. And when they don't do anything, I'll insult them again with another racial insensitivity saying that they're chimping out. I do not want to live in a society where this is a legitimate way to either create content and or make money, because then you're going to have a whole host of content creators that think that this is what they are supposed to do. We got to bring some kind of decency back. And I don't know how we have to revamp and look at what laws we have right now, because most of the laws that we have on the books can easily be violated because Donald Trump has rewritten everything. I've come to find out that the U.S. Constitution is just basically a series of recommendations. You don't have to follow it. You can commit treason and attempt to overthrow the federal government because a group of people didn't like the outcome of an election that their candidate lost. And the consequence for those people, and some of them were, in fact, incarcerated. Some of them were sentenced. There was the lady that stole Nancy Pelosi's laptop. You hear about her? She just got released to the custody of her mother. She stole the Speaker of the House's computer, and they just let her mother pick her up. But at the end of the day, Donald Trump pardoned all of them. He barely took any heat for that. So there's no consequence to trying to overthrow the government. It's called sedition. If you ever read the U.S. Constitution, which, I mean, at this point, why would you? The only crime that's mentioned in the whole document, because it's a legal document, it creates the structure and the foundation and the duties of the federal government, gives a lot of power. Most of the power goes to Congress, but there's only one crime mentioned in the Constitution. And this is a crime that those who created this document knew had to be taken very, very seriously because they couldn't predict the future. They had an idea that slaves might be free. They're like, well, let's just create a document that allows for their freedom, but let's not write it in here just yet. Sedition. It's the only crime that's mentioned in the entire U.S. Constitution. It was committed on January 6, 2021, and at the same time, it was also forgiven. Joe Biden did a mass pardon. So Trump did a mass pardon of the people that were involved in January 6th, right? All their those federal crimes were forgiven. Joe Biden also did a mass pardon, and people had an absolute fit. They were very angry. In fact, several presidents have done mass pardons. I think that maybe Jimmy Carter, he pardoned all of the people that dodged the Vietnam War draft. I sometimes wonder if I would have went to Vietnam. If I was around at that time, probably not. Probably would have fled. Well, I would have been in college, though, too. So that was an exemption. So Jimmy Carter did a mass. If I think I'm correct. Jimmy Carter did a mass pardon for the draft dodgers of the Vietnam War, those that were charged criminally and federally. And then Joe Biden did a mass pardon for anyone who had a federal marijuana conviction. You got to keep this in mind. This is how partisan this damn country is. marijuana is legal and readily available in damn near the entire country. Okay. And we know the harms that the criminalization of marijuana did. Now you got states that are getting all this tax revenue and all this business and all this entrepreneurship because they legalized marijuana. And some of the deepest, reddest, most conservative states in this country, marijuana is legal, at least medicinally, if not recreationally as well. But when Joe Biden did a mass pardon of people that had federal marijuana convictions, he took heat for that. Why? Because the people, most of the people that had mass or had the federal marijuana convictions were black. Could you imagine being in a state where you passed legal marijuana legislation because you want the tax revenue and you want the business, but then get mad when black people that had marijuana offenses get pardoned? Because guess what this does now? It allows the African-American who might have been incarcerated or was incarcerated or had a felony on their record because they got caught selling weed or distributing weed or whatever the case may be. Now they can be an entrepreneur, too. It creates more competition. And that's the other thing about the whole legalization of marijuana, which Wisconsin folks think, oh, it's going to be a great idea. We missed that train. Too much competition. And the taxes will be so damn high on it. And the demand probably has reduced itself because I assure you, with marijuana not being legal in the state of Wisconsin, people that want it are still able to get it. And legalizing it here is not necessarily going to shift people's consumer behavior. Whoever you're getting it from now is probably who you're still going to get it from because state legal marijuana is way expensive. It's too expensive. And also, just to be practical, looking at some of the social issues we're dealing with in the city of Milwaukee. Like right now, we're about to cage in Brady Street and put a fence around Water Street. We don't know what to do with the youth. They're taking over the parks. They're doing these street takeovers. Do you think that legal recreational marijuana will make any of those problems go away or make them easier? It will not. Now, here's the thing. The people who are in those groups of youth that are causing those problems, they're probably still getting their marijuana anyway. But see, if you legalize it, now they can go to the dispensary right down the street, buy their weed, smoke it, and then go commit chaos and mayhem and street takeovers and park takeovers, et cetera, et cetera. I think we're in a place where the legalization of a substance that absolutely can be abused. And yes, you can get addicted to marijuana. Hell, you can get addicted to shopping. I've been addicted to a woman's perfume before. You can get addicted to anything. I just don't know that if it's the right thing to do right now. And whatever tax revenue that we would get from it would kind of be like selling our soul. And I don't know if that tax revenue would be worth it. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
RC Creation Muse says via YouTube, freedom is an inalienable right, not a full autonomy right by any means, in parentheses, God or nature. I don't even know what the hell that means. Freedom is regulated. It doesn't mean you can go do whatever you want whenever you want to do it. Because if left to their own devices, some people will do some very reckless and dangerous things. You have the freedom to express yourself within reason. Like, you can do stuff as long as you're not harmful or disruptive. And that's where people maybe get it messed up. You can say whatever you want within reason. There's still consequences. The law doesn't necessarily criminalize your speech unless that speech is a threat. Right. Some of you might say to somebody, oh, I'm going to kill you. No, you can't say you're going to kill somebody, but I got freedom of speech. Yeah, but you can't make a threat. It all has to be reasonable, like reasonable community standards, but you got to regulate freedom. We have the rights to bear arms, and it's a very significant right. It's in the Constitution. But you can't bring your gun everywhere. You have to regulate that right. You can't bring your gun to a federal building. You can't bring your gun in a federal courthouse. And you can go ahead and try and say, I've got the Second Amendment. I can bring my gun anywhere. Okay, watch and you see how those federal law enforcement will take you down trying to bring a gun into a federal courthouse where there are federal judges who get threatened all of the time. And we find that to be reasonable. You can put a sign up. I don't really know how this works, though. So businesses will say no firearms are allowed in here. That's a tough one. I don't think that you can't get arrested, but the business can ask you to leave. And if you don't leave, then you can be trespassed. But if you bring a firearm to a business that's open to the public and they have the sign in the window, the sign is not law. The sign is business policy, because I know that's quite confusing as well. So whatever freedoms that we have, they have to be regulated. Now, there's freedoms and there's privileges. Some people believe that they have the freedom or the right to drive a car. No, you don't. Probably one of the most misunderstood privileges in America. Driving is an activity and that you have to do carefully, cautiously, with presence of mind, and also sober. There are rules and laws you have to follow. And if you violate those rules and laws, there will be real penalties. People honestly believe that driving a motor vehicle is a right. It is not. It is a privilege. People talked about voter ID, and I never was in favor of voter ID because I know what they were trying to get at when they instituted it. And the amount of time that I've spent of my professional life, my adult life, trying to convince people to vote, even for president, tells me beyond the shadow of a doubt that most people are not going to waste their time, effort, and energy voting twice. I can't get most of y'all to vote once. I don't know who called in last week, and they was going on and on and on about elected officials, and I asked them who their school board member was. Well, when was the last time you voted for school board? Never. When you would think that when African Americans first got the protected federal right to vote through the Voting Rights Act, why didn't they require voter ID then? Because they really didn't trust black people, because for so long we were denied the ability to vote, right? And if it was such a problem, why wouldn't they institute it? Why didn't Americans have voter ID whenever we legalized suffrage for everybody? It was just a trick and a ploy. And what you can't do is implement something arbitrary like, oh, you have to have an ID. What if somebody is a homeless veteran? You're going to sit here and tell me somebody who served this country that does not have any identification, but literally has military records, that you're going to deny them the right to vote because they don't have an actual home address? That is insane to me. And somebody will use the example of, oh, I love this example. Well, sure, when you need to show your ID to get on an airplane. Or Sherwin, because they always start by saying my name. You need an ID to go to the liquor store and buy liquor. Hell, I ain't needed an ID to buy liquor in 30 years, probably. At least. Buying alcohol is also a privilege. So in all of the things in which you have to legally identify yourself, those are likely privileges. It also should be noted, because I'm coming to find out some people are unaware of this, and I don't know if y'all are watching like sovereign citizens content on the internet, but stop it. Stop pretending that you know the law. Stop pretending that when you get pulled over by a cop, you can have an argument and a debate. You want that interaction to be over as quickly as humanly possible. Why y'all are arguing with cops and trying to debate the ticket? Just go to court. Just do a yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Do you know how fast you were going? You can tell them that you're not going to answer any questions, or you tell them, some arbitrary number because you don't want to make it seem like you don't know what the speed limit is. You don't want to get into no argument with a cop. They are trained to entrap. You don't do that. You are required in the state of Wisconsin, when you are exercising your privilege to operate a motor vehicle on public roads, private roads might be different, but public roads, you are required to show proof of current insurance for that vehicle, and you are required to show a valid operator's license. You have to. Now, I got pulled over once, and I didn't have my driver's license, and I panicked a little bit, but I would say this for an additional safety measure, because sometimes you don't have your – I didn't have my wallet on me. I left the house in a hurry, didn't have my wallet, but I know my driver's license number by heart. You should, too. You know your Social Security number, don't you? Now, technically, you're still supposed to have the driver's license on you, but if you have your driver's license number, the officer that is pulling you over can obtain the exact same information with the driver's license number. Because all they're going to do when you give them your license, they're just going to get the driver's license number off of the card anyway and just type it in to get all the details they need to know about you. But these are things that you have to have by law. They can give you a ticket for that. So let's not confuse rights and privileges. And I think that we may see them as interchangeable. They certainly are not. Take a break, come back. Got good news for you data center fans. One might be coming to Midtown. That is actually our YouTube poll question of the day. We have seen in rural areas people come out and go to town hall meetings and voice their opposition to data centers moving into these small towns. I say build them. Ain't nothing going on in them small rural towns anyway, but a whole bunch of Trumpism. You're not doing nothing with the land. Build some data so I have a place to store pictures of my enchiladas. That data got to get stored somewhere. Now, we're not using our phones less. We're not taking less pictures. In fact, we're not conserving data at all. When they told us we have an unlimited data plan, we're using all the unlimited. Well, all that stuff has to get stored somewhere. And right now, Midtown is empty. Or the Walmart is empty. And that's a lot of square footage that's not collecting very much property taxes. Why not put something there? Because we're going to complain about how much our taxes are. Why not bring in investment that is going to potentially lower our property taxes? Because whoever owns this data center, they will be paying the same or probably more than what Walmart was paying. But we have a problem with development in this city. And if you guys recall how long the Park East Freeway corridor sat vacant before we had the presence of mind to build a new Bucks Arena in the Deer District. So that was all land that was covered up and we couldn't develop because 145 was the freeway that was this huge tower over all that land. They tore the freeway down. And we had all this land. It sat vacant for 20 years. Let me do you one better. I think the Bradley Center opened in probably 1989 or 1990, somewhere around there. When we tore down the Park East, the Bradley Center was still in the early days of its life. That land where the Deer District is right now, where the Fiserv Forum is, sat vacant for so long, the Bradley Center started to literally fall apart. And we're like, oh, well, the Bradley Center needs to be replaced because that land sat vacant for 20 whole years. That freeway was torn down and like they probably started tearing it down in like 98 or 99. I think it was all done by the year 2000. They started construction on the Fiserv Forum in like 2017, 2018, something like that. The Bradley Center just started breaking and cracking. I remember sitting in a suite and looking up and seeing these gigantic 3-inch wide gaps in the concrete of the Bradley Center. That's how long that land sat vacant. We don't have that kind of time in the city of Milwaukee to let land that can be developed and collect property taxes just to sit there because we can't decide what to do with it. Take a break, come back, talk to Kay on the other side. See what Kay has to say to us. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I'll be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
make sure you add my YouTube channel. It's Hughes Views 414. I think I'm going to go live on Saturday. So I add Hughes Views 414 on, well, everywhere. Threads, Instagram, the Tiki-Taki, and YouTube. I posted a video yesterday on my YouTube channel, so make sure you go and subscribe. I'll be posting more stuff on the Hughes Views 414 YouTube channel, so go and add it. Right now, let's talk to Kay. Hello, Kay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
Well, I kind of want to talk a little bit about the data center. So I hear you and I hear most of the proponents for the data center because, like, you're correct, right? There is a vacancy right now with Walmart moving out. There is a gap that, you know, the residents around there have been paying. But my question is this. If the data center comes there, right, we know that most people's electricity is going to rise. We already also know that more than likely there may be, in my opinion, a bit of gentrification that could possibly begin to happen, right? Because we're going to have certain data center type jobs that are going to be there. Are the people that are around Midtown even going to be able to benefit from having that data center there? Or is that just going to cause a situation where people are becoming displaced over a period of time? And that's really my real question. When it comes down to having that data center there, do they have any type of infrastructure in place that will guarantee that the residents there currently have an opportunity to have a job there? Because currently at Midtown,
okay, you're breaking up on us. We lost Kay. I think I got the gist of it. Are there guarantees against displacement? No. Will the electricity usage go up? Yep. Can regulations be put on the data center to where they are responsible for paying for their electricity that they use? Yep. Will it probably max out our grid? Yep. Can the government also use eminent domain and say, oh, residents, you don't want the data center here? How about we just bulldoze your house and build it in the neighborhood? Can the government do that? Yep. Will there be demonstrable public benefit for the data center? You'll have a place to store your Thanksgiving dinner pictures. Let's talk to Andy. Andy, hi. How are you doing? You're on 101.7 The Truth.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to highlight the and agree with the previous caller about the dangers of data centers. They release contribute to the air pollution. They actually increase the temperature. They increase the temperature, the heat temperature, about four to ten percent. Studies have shown. The woman in northern Wisconsin testified about a data center very recently about the creek turning milky. And releasing having heavy metals. They're not honest about the amount of water they're using. They want data centers in our area because we have the Great Lakes, fresh water, huge water source. And it's not just to store, you know, in people's photos and whatnot. We're turning into a surveillance state. Larry Ellison and his son and the oligarchs, they want us under 24-hour surveillance.
Well, we already are.
The elimination of
way too late for that.
No. Even more so. More than what we are. 24-hour surveillance. The elimination of privacy. And so the data centers contribute to air pollution. They increase the temperature. Air pollution, release heavy metals. They're not honest about the amount of water that they use. So they suck our water resources dry. They don't care about people. They don't care if the people, you know, don't have water. They don't care. There's really no benefit. This is really to power massive surveillance of Americans, really. And right. Then Larry Ellison has even stated that he wants us to be surveilled 24/7. The technocrats, Thiel and Ellison, they want us to be broken up into technocratically led states. techno states where they are the rulers. And they've been honest about that. You can just look it up. So data center, there's really no benefit to data centers. They'll push your electricity bill. And also, they want to build these things, and they want us to pay for it. And the amount of water and electricity uses is really unknown. They're not honest about it.
All right. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Have a good day.
All right. She's very much against it. To build a data center inland is different than the one that they proposed building in Racine, because they were, in fact, going to use either a nearby water resource or Lake Michigan. But this is a big if. In fact, I was talking to the alderman of the district. The alderman didn't even know. The alderman saw a press release or saw like a local news article. The alderman of the area was not even alerted that there's a consideration to build a data center where the Midtown Walmart is. And so they're not, whoever these folks are, we don't know if it's Google, is it Microsoft, is it OpenAI, we don't know. They're obviously not starting off on the right foot with the legislative support that they would probably need. But this one has to be different because, and I know that a lot of folks have talked about, oh, and the water, they're going to take the water. But if you build a data center inland, they're self-cooling. They don't need water resources like we think that they do. There is technology in which the cooling is self-contained. Yeah, would it be an environmental risk, an environmental hazard? Absolutely. But hell, Walmart was too. You got to think about this. Walmart, when you build a Walmart, it's something like per year, 400,000 vehicles will come and go from any, that's average. So think about the damage to the streets. That's more maintenance on the streets. Think about the automobile exhaust. And what happens is Walmart is not responsible for what we call externalities. So with 400,000 people coming and going from a Walmart, workers and trucks and employees and shoppers every single year, destroying the roads, Walmart is not paying for the repaving of those roads because they are responsible for increasing the traffic. So there's always going to be some downsides. And also, if we need property tax dollars, we don't really have a lot of choice because, y'all, the only thing that's proposed to go in that space is a storage facility. And there's no jobs associated with a storage facility, like one person that's at the front desk at the storage facility. Take a break, come back, continue our chit-chat. And then something I referred to earlier, ladies, do you ever get creeped out when a man you don't know, especially in a professional setting, and he's meeting you, you're meeting him for the first time, and he opens his arms to hug you. Does that creep you out? Let's talk about that on the other side. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.